This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
You're listening to the podcast of The Petri Dish on Joy 94.9. For more information and the latest science updates, you can check out the blog or more podcasts at joy.org.au/thepetridish.
Petri dish, noun. A small, shallow dish of thin glass or plastic with a loose cover used especially for cultures in bacteriology. Petri was an assistant to the eminent bacteriologist Robert Koch. In 1887, Petri introduced a vessel for growing bacteria that consisted of two round rim plates, one serving as a cover for the other. Petri dish.
You're listening to The Petri Dish on Joy 94.9. You might be feeling a little angry, a little bit excited.
Ready? Maybe just a little bit emotional.
Oh, yes. And that's exactly what we're going to be talking about today. On today's program, we're telling you all about emotions. What are they?
Yes, we're going to just talk about the anxiety pill. Do we really need a pill for anxiety?
Exactly. I don't think so. And our myth today, or perhaps the movie that we're going to bust, is if an alien virus came, could that virus really destroy all of our emotions?
Yes, all this and more tonight on The Petri Dish. But first, it gets in the mood. I think enough of this opera track. Sorry, Dan, if you're listening out there, for the opera Sunday, 6 p.m.
Nice pimping.
They did give us that track. But to get us in the mood, I think that we need a little bit of Destiny's Child emotions. What do you think?
I think that would be just perfect.
You're listening to The Petri Dish here on Joy 94.9. That was Destiny's Child with Emotions. Because today we're getting a little bit emotional here on the Petri Dish. And Wendy is going to give us a quick science update on science news with emotions.
That's exactly right. Now, peer pressure leads to bad sexual experiences. Now, although this might not sound like it's got too much to do with emotions, but this month, the University of WA found that teenage girls who lose their virginity when they're not ready are more likely to feel regret and disappointment. And disappointment is an emotion, and it's so relevant because it happened this month. Now, that's not that exciting, I thought, because obviously if you're going to lose your virginity before you're ready, you will be a little bit sad.
And I actually don't really know any stories that are happy anyway from first times.
Really? My first time was quite happy.
Well, aren't you lucky, Wendy?
There were 68 teenage girls that we interviewed between the ages of 14 and 19, and it wasn't clear whether they were having straight sex or homosexual sex. But they said that idealistic perceptions about sex and relationships, peer pressure and coercion from sexual partners often all had an interplay into unwanted first sexual experiences.
Oh, so remember, just do it when you're ready.
Do it when you're ready. That's right. All right, a little bit more exciting. Research from the University of Queensland revealed this month that a traditional extract of kava, which is a South Pacific plant, was a safe and effective treatment for reducing anxiety. Each week, participants were given a clinical assessment as well as a report, a questionnaire that they reported themselves, to measure their anxiety and depression levels. And the researchers found that anxiety levels decreased dramatically for participants taking 5 tablets of kava per day compared to a placebo group.
Wow.
Excellent.
And this is a natural treatment.
That's exactly right.
Great news.
Although very difficult to say what's natural and what's not, because if it's got the same chemicals as the pill pop and anxiety ones I'm going to be talking about later on the show.
Yeah.
Maybe that's not that natural.
True. What else is in science news, Wendy?
Stressing about our climate earlier this month, research from Murdoch University revealed that climate change may be linked to depression as people become increasingly anxious about the environment as it changes over time. With mental health currently the 4th highest global disease in terms of health burdens, Professor Albrecht from the Murdoch University predicts it will become the 2nd most significant issue by 2020. He says it's similar to a feeling of nostalgia,
yeah,
because there are unwelcome changes in their home environment. Ooh. So, you know, you're living the same environment, but things around you that you can't control are changing. And surprisingly, thank you. Such a gentleman, Jane.
Ladies first, go.
And As soon as I read this, a friend was actually talking to me about how beautiful autumn was.
Yeah.
And how she was so sad that we were ruining our environment, and it has this sort of beautiful way of...
So we're feeling anxiety over the impression over environment.
Exactly.
That makes sense.
Says this report from Murdoch University. And our final piece of news today from Science News relating to emotions is, it's a little bit late in the game, so maybe it's not new news, but exciting research nonetheless. From the University of New South Wales, published late last year, discovered that people can relearn emotions after severe brain injury.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so after you've had a severe tumour or brain injury, for example, having a hammer go through your head.
Yes.
If it hits certain parts of the brain that Shane is going to be talking to us about, then you can actually, it can completely impair your ability to interpret emotions. And that includes understanding language when people are supposed to be saying a joke and you completely cannot understand body language, facial expressions and tone of voice. But they found that after treatment, using photographs and videos and emphasizing positive behavior, such as giving complaints, as well as negative behavior, then people actually demonstrated improvement in their ability to understand emotions.
Wow, that's fantastic news.
Well, thank you very much, Shane. Up next, we'll be telling you a little bit about what is emotions. I'm not sure if Shane did think that was fantastic news.
That is fantastic news that you can recover after brain injury.
Yeah, all right. Time for a song before my emotions take me over.
Yo, enjoyed it for 9 with the Petri Dish. That was Cat Power with Sea of Love from that lovely movie, Juno.
That was a beautiful song.
Yeah.
Excellent. Tell us about emotions.
Yeah, Shane. So you may be feeling a bit after that song, but do you actually know why you're feeling emotional?
No.
Do you know why?
I don't know. Now, this part of the show is actually called Remember This Scientific Fact. Yes. So from high school, perhaps we learned a little bit about why we feel sad, why we feel happy.
Well, actually, to answer that question, after a few hours of research, it is actually very difficult to answer what is an emotion. There's constant debate between psychologists, philosophers, and scientists as to what an actual makes up an emotion. So is it just a state of mind? Is it just something we, and subconscious thought? Is it chemical responses? Or is it a mixture of both? Or is it purely to do with what they like to call a soul and a heart?
Why don't you tell me?
Why don't I tell you? So we're not here to talk about philosophy, so let's
do
it.
And I'm sure not here to talk about a soul.
We're here to talk science.
That's right. I don't believe in that.
So the definition of an emotion is a mental and physiological state associated with a wide variety of feelings, thoughts and behaviours. So when you're feeling happy, you'll have a bit more of an open body expression. When you're sad, we're a bit more closed up. When we're angry, we have a stern face. So in psychology, there's actually a lot of experiments with emotional recognition to do with the face, because we express a lot of our emotions through our face. So those changes. But let's go back to a more of a science. Not that psychology isn't science, but let's go to a neuroscience point of view, behavioral neuroscience point of view. Excellent. So they thought that emotions is caused by two things in our brain. One of them is known as the limbic system, and this is the part of your brain. It consists of the hypothalamus, the pituitary gland, the amygdala, and the hippocampus. And we've been mentioning these throughout the few weeks here on the Petri Dish.
Now, this is the really old part of the brain, isn't it? The bit that sort of a lot of apes and other primates also have.
And a lot of mammals also still have these, and it's near your brain stem.
So it's where's the brainstem? Above the spinal cord.
Just above the spinal cord. So that they all exist there, and these are really, they're all responsible for hormonal control. It's a really small area of your brain, and they're the biggest part in hormonal control in your body.
So it's quality, not quantity. That's what the brainstem does.
Yeah, that's what it's trying to tell us. And the autonomic nervous system, so that's something that just happens automatically. You don't really have to think about it. So things like heartbeat and breathing. And they're also, this part of your brain is responsible for the fight or flight response. And so it also responds for things like dilating of your pupils, running and sweating, and for you to run away when something's scaring you, or sit there and fight.
I always imagined that if there was a saber-toothed tiger coming, what would you want your body to do in order to get rid of that? And so you'd want your heart to be pumping so that it would divert lots of blood to your muscles and take it away from your brain.
Yeah, so that's the hormone for that, the simple name for it, because I can't pronounce the actual name of it, is adrenaline.
Excellent.
And adrenaline is responsible for your body to break down glucose pretty quickly and for you to run like you've never run before.
From that saber-toothed tiger. Yes. Excellent. And so is this when these hormones, when adrenaline comes through our body or when certain hormones, is that what causes then our bodies to open up when we're happy or to close in when we're sad?
Well, yeah, it has an effect on the automatic nervous system, and it does cause those other movements, and it doesn't just affect your brain because actually once these hormones are released, they can't enter back into the brain. So they flow around the body and they influence how we're also moving and expressing joy and happiness.
But adrenaline doesn't. How does adrenaline, is that our key chemical in the brain? That's
not our key chemical in the brain, but it's definitely a key chemical when it comes down to survival of the fittest. And it is responsible for us moving faster and getting that extra energy. That's to do with our muscle, and the sweating is another set of hormones.
But in terms of emotions, what are the key chemicals?
Well, I've got a few here. There's probably a whole range of them. We've got oxytocin. And we've mentioned this before, it's to do with sexual arousal, and also in the parietal vole, which we discussed a few weeks back, bonding with their male partners, is also increases the feeling of love, empathy, and connection to other people. And when you take ecstasy, that's what you're being released, extra oxytocin.
Aha, excellent.
We have dopamine.
Not excellent.
Not excellent. No, shouldn't be doing that. And then you've got dopamine, which we discussed during addiction, which is the reward pathway. So dopamine also makes you feel happy. So when you eat something that you really like, dopamine is part of that survival, that I should eat this again or I should do that again.
Great.
And, you know, we also got to remember that emotions are somewhat learnt from when we were kids. So, you know, good things create good responses, and that's why we have them later in life. And it's like we talk about emotional scarring when they're a child, because, you know, even though something good may be happening, they may have a bad emotional response to it, and that's where we get emotional trauma.
So this debate between that you originally said, between the philosophy of emotions and the neuroscience, is actually quite ingrained, and they're not mutually exclusive.
No.
You can believe that emotions are caused by hormones, but because hormone release is caused by our environment, then they're
exactly often, and that comes down to, is it an innate thing or is it a learnt thing? Because for example, emotions such as love came about, this is a theory that in prehistoric times, that part of the brain developed because you're nurturing and caring for your offspring.
Right.
Yeah.
Wow.
So that's where love comes from, everybody. Taking care of babies. And then we got serotonin as well, which is also another hormone associated with happiness. And endorphins, we always hear about endorphins, and they are responsible for things like happiness and joy as well.
That's right. And I hate to quote Legally Blonde, but are endorphins released during exercise?
Yes, they are.
Is that the key to why we get an endorphin high when we're... Or
why we feel really good? Yeah, I think as well, you're loosening up your muscles as well, and you're feeling a bit more less stressed, and endorphins are running through your body and you're feeling happy and high.
Excellent. And so do we know things about why it is that certain things, such as chocolate, is a pretty universal, everyone likes chocolate. And perhaps everyone gets a positive hormone from a positive feeling from a flower.
Because chocolate tastes good, your dopamine will be like, we should have that again.
And a flower? Everyone loves flowers.
That's probably due to scent, positive scent. You know, we'll have it. Because, you know, I think my friend's really scared of flowers because she got stung by a bee when she was a kid when she smelt one.
Oh, so not everyone loves flowers.
Exactly. And, you know, a lot of the lack of these hormones have serious effects such as depression. I was reading a thing on sociopaths that they actually have decreased levels of these hormones as well. So they don't really understand emotion and really know how to feel emotion. So it's quite an interesting area as to what is an emotion.
Excellent. Well, perhaps we'll hear a song. And after the break, we'll discuss our controversy for today, which is anxiety pills. And should you be taking them?
You're listening to the Petri Dish here on Joy 94.9, and that was Hello Goodbye with Here in Your Arms, a very emotional song.
It was beautiful, because we're talking all about emotions here on the Petri Dish, and that is why we feel them. And now we're going to talk about why we get anxiety,
And our controversy, it's actually our controversy today because we're talking about whether you should be taking anxiety pills, whether people should be taking anxiety pills.
Yes, we're dishing out these prescriptions like sugar, really.
That's right. People aren't getting properly diagnosed and there's been a lot of concern that doctors aren't putting enough time into other treatments and just getting everyone to pop pills.
Fast-paced days, Wendy. I don't have time for this.
That's right. Now we're using dramatic language. Everyone is not taking a popping pill anxiety, but I guess we get the message. Now, a study in 1997, so 10 years ago, from the Australian Bureau of Statistics, reported that 10% of Australians have met the criteria for an anxiety disorder of some kind. And this number is now on the rise quite substantially. I think the last figures were around 30% been considered.
In the past 10 years, we have gone from 10% to a really anxious society.
To either that or we're quickly diagnosing everyone with a disorder. And it's a little bit exponential, the amount that you want to be that you're going to be diagnosing people, because then people look at their friends and go, oh, well, they're a little bit upset every now and then. Maybe I've got depression too. But on the other hand, perhaps in 1997, people were just thinking, oh, well, I'm just supposed to be really annoyed half the time. Or,
yeah,
I'm just moody. That's what normal people are, right?
Yeah, so, and then people should just tell them to harden up, right?
Exactly, and people aren't living satisfying lives. So why shouldn't they go and seek out treatment?
So you're saying that we're becoming a bit more of a sympathetic society and that people may actually have problems instead of 10 years ago when we just said harden up?
Harden up. Well, it's definitely a difficult topic to broach and to discuss. When we do talk about anxiety disorders, there's several. There's a generalized anxiety disorder, which means irrational worrying about things that could go wrong. There's also agoraphobia, panic disorder. So panic disorder is characterized by sudden attacks of fear or anxiety. The symptoms are generally the fight or flight response, so things that Shane was talking about before, that there might be a very small trigger and all of a sudden your heart will be racing, your eyes will be wide, you can't concentrate on anything except what you're feeling anxiety towards.
And you want to run away.
Exactly, and you want to get out of that situation fast. Other types of phobias that are characterized under anxiety are social phobias, which is an excessive or unreasonable fear of being in the center of attention or doing something embarrassing. And there's also obsessive compulsive disorders and post-traumatic stress disorders.
So these are forms of anxieties and various degrees of them. Is that what we're trying to...
Well, they're triggered by different things.
Okay.
And so they are varying degrees of each of these. So with post-traumatic stress disorder, soldiers, for example, is a really common reason when you come from war that you might feel post-traumatic stress. And then there's different variations. Some people can't function properly in society. Other people, when they feel a trigger, such as a lot of people who have experienced war, might be thrown off by a large sound or a car backfiring, and then it will trigger some emotion and some anxiety, and then you'll get that physiological response that we were talking about before. Now, the Medical Association of Australia suggests that you do try other treatments, such as psychological therapies, counselling sessions, and graded techniques of exposure to certain things before you take pills. So there's a lot of emphasis on actually talking about your emotions and getting them out and trying to really hearten down to what it is that you're feeling anxious about. And the graded exposure is if you are afraid of something, for example, spiders or perhaps public transport tight spaces.
You expose them to it gradually to show that's not that bad.
Precisely. Exactly. Mm. Now, so there are other treatments that are available. However, pills is the common one.
So is this because psychologists can't be bothered going, look, I don't really have time to talk to you today. I've got 100 people here, have a pill?
Well, psychologists can't actually, they don't have medical degrees. So they can't distribute pills, but psychiatrists can.
Psychiatrists, sorry, I forgot.
As well as
distinction between those two.
As well as doctors, general GPs can also give. And I think it's very much related to not having enough time. And it's not necessarily lazy doctors at all. We do have a doctor's shortage in Australia. And if pills are effective and we don't have any evidence of long-term deficits or long-term problems with popping pills, so
it's hard to say, well, why should a doctor spend all of his time or all of her time, sorry, treating a patient when there's other patients that are waiting outside and when a pill hasn't been proved to be a problem. Lots of issues.
So the psychiatrist is trying to say that this is kind of on the bottom of my agenda versus someone else who really needs my attention. So here's a pill that we're trying to say because we have a shortage.
I'm not sure. That was the argument I just put there. You can definitely SMS us in on 0427JOY949 if you've got an opinion on this matter. I suppose I'm just defending the doctors out there that are perhaps prescribing pills a little bit too early in the day. But I would hope that people would try and sort out their issues quite early. By discussion rather than pills. But I do have friends that feel very comfortable taking pills and they've been taking them for a very long time. And perhaps after this song, we'll just talk about exactly what these pills are doing to your brain and whether there is some evidence that they perhaps shouldn't be taken as often as they are.
You're enjoying 94.9 with the Petri Dish. You're listening to the Petri Dish here on Jordan 5.9, and that was The Biggest and Largest Adventure Ever by The Greats. And Wendy's going to tell us how the anxiety pill actually affects our brain, because before that, we're talking about what is anxiety.
Exactly. Now, there's different neurotransmitters, which are chemicals in the brain. Neurotransmitters are sort of like the phone cord when you're trying to call up neurons. So on one line is one neuron and the other line, and then the electronic wire is neurotransmitters.
Yeah.
And there's different kinds. And we were talking about these on the show before when Shane was telling us how it is that emotions work. So serotonin is a neurotransmitter, and that has a calming effect on the brain. Neuroepinephrine, which is also adrenaline, is a stimulant, as we all know.
Yep.
Acetylcholine is produced when someone's under stress, and it helps us cope with stress. Now, depressed people or people suffering depression usually have low levels of serotonin and adrenaline. So that would explain why they less calming effect on their body. Anxiety is often triggered by increased adrenaline, as you could imagine, in places where you wouldn't expect to get an adrenaline rush. So this is what it is that treatments do, and different pills will do different things, is they block the effect of neurotransmitters, so they stop chemicals working in your brain, or they'll enhance the effect that certain chemicals have on the brain.
Okay, so they'll either calm us down by not letting adrenaline do its job, or help us by making us feel happy or calmer by giving us serotonin. Is that right?
Exactly. So Prozac, for example, affects the balance of serotonin and adrenaline, and that's how it acts in the body. So it enhances the effect of serotonin. And monoamine oxidases, which are certain types of... It's a product that breaks down adrenaline and dopamine in the body. So inhibitors of this, it's a certain type of drug, MAO inhibitors, you might know if you're perhaps on them, they break down MOA. So you actually break down your adrenaline faster.
Okay.
So in people with anxiety, they're creating too much adrenaline and this drug will break down that adrenaline.
So they don't feel so anxious and needing to run from everything.
Exactly. Now, it's very interesting because although these drugs, we know that the effect they're having on the brain and on the body, there's a huge placebo effect when you think you're taking these pills, but you're actually just taking sugar pills. So 35% of people, there was a study that showed that if you were just given a dummy pill, 35% would improve their symptoms of depression.
Oh, wow.
Versus 50 to 65%. Improving if you get an antidepressant, like an actual drug. So which is a huge placebo effect. It really tells us that it's definitely not the drug itself that's just helping you.
So it's a bit of a psychological thing as well, that because we think it's going to make us feel better, we're going to feel better.
Exactly. That's exactly right. And a study from 2008 showed that new antidepressants such as Prozac might be no better, in fact, at relieving the symptoms of depression than a dummy pill. And that was a study, concluded just last year.
Wow. So all these pills might not be actually doing anything. It just might be a really expensive way to cure something that could be fixed with a bit of talking.
That's exactly right. Or a little bit. It's also a bit of a Dumbo feather, I think.
That we hold the feather, we can fly.
Exactly. Now, next week on the show, we're going to be talking all about winter and things getting colder. Yes.
But this is amazing. I'm sorry to...
I've inspired you, have I? I think it definitely shows the power of people's individual...
Yeah.
Individual ways of
dealing with the issue. I guess the power of the mind. And so there we go. If you're feeling a little bit down or think you're feeling depressed or anxious, it might be a really good thing to go and just talk to a psychiatrist about your feelings rather than a pill or demand to be talked to.
That's right. Or just have faith in yourself that perhaps you can talk your way out of it. But having said that, if you do recognize that there are symptoms of depression that people cannot get through on their own, and if you feel like you need some help, there are drugs out there that can assist in that problem.
So you should definitely go to a psychiatrist and
yeah, you're just instructing me. You should. Yeah, that's very personal.
You should definitely go. You should definitely go, Wendy. No, just joking. You should definitely go out there if you're feeling any of these symptoms you hear or you think you have it. And, you know, if they're going to give you a pill straight up, just demand that I'd rather be talked to first so we can actually get to the heart of the problem.
That's right. Try and talk it out. But if you can't, don't feel ashamed.
There's nothing wrong with it.
You have a right to be happy.
Anyway, and yes, next week we are going to talk, because next week is the beginning of winter, so I think it's good to talk about the seasons, the sun or lack of sun.
That's right. We're going to talk about our controversy will be, is Antarctica melting? And I'm quite excited to hear about that. Of course, after this song, it's time for to hear about rage.
Yeah, some myth busting. Can they really happen? But first, here's a track. It's a Kylie Minogue here in your arms.
Oh, it is a Kylie Minogue. I thought...
You're listening to The Petri Dish here on Joy 94.9, and we've been talking about emotions. And right now, we're going to talk about whether rage blackouts can happen.
That's right. This is our Remember This Scientific Fact. Oh, is it? No.
No,
it fits into our popular myth. That's right. So what is the myth?
Wendy, that rage blackouts can they happen?
That's right. Do you believe they can? You tell me.
Because if you,
what is a rage blackout?
This came up because I watch too much TV, and this comes from the OC when Summer would hit Seth for no reason. Goes, oh, sorry, rage blackout. Don't know what I'm doing. So it's actually being angry. Don't remember why you're angry or why you did what you did.
Oh, so can you get so angry that you've forgotten?
Well, I think we should answer the question, what causes rage? So rage is actually, anger is a part of fight or flight. So if you're going to sit there and fight, you're going to be angry. You want to have those emotions. And so you've got pumping oxytocin, vasopressin, and a steroid called corticotropin being secreted from the hypothalamus to get us all revved up and excited and in there.
Oh, so we were saying before, the hypothalamus sits right above your spinal cord, and it's releasing all of these hormones to get you angry so you can fight that saber-toothed tiger.
And then adrenocorticotropin, so adrenaline and steroids, hormones secreted from the pituitary gland, and this is what causes the rage to surface up in you and causing an anger response. So if you're aggravated and you want to fight, this is what happens. So all these hormones are going and you're feeling that rage, and it's because of these hormones and a little bit of adrenaline's there as well, so you're about to get some serious beating up action.
So when I find that when people poke me, I really don't like poking. When people poke me, I feel all of those reactions. Like, I feel really angry. Do you think that somehow it's been ingrained in me to release all of these hormones at once?
If you go back to the segment before about remember this scientific fact about emotions, these are probably learned things. So as a kid, or we're always learning new reactions. So something that annoys you is a negative thing. So being poked actually might be you might think, oh my God, why? So your brain remembers it's bad. So to defend yourself from this horrible poking, you want to slap this person. And that is what...
So could I ever elicit such rage from a poke that I just end up slapping them?
Well, you know, you can actually put rage, artificially stimulate rage as well. Wow. So you don't have to do really anything. It's been found that by electrically stimulating the midbrain around the limbic system, so the hypothalamus, the pituitary gland, the amygdala,
all these parts of the brain that are producing all these hormones,
uncontrolled rage is stimulated, so attacking chairs and walls, people, phone booths, and snapping pencils. Just happens. Wow. But if the stimulation occurs in the hypothalamus, it has been found in many different animals that the rage is focused at members of the same species in well-coordinated attacks.
So you go for your own species as opposed to another species. So if someone stimulated my brainstem, sorry, I was going to make a rude joke, but that's clearly not time now. And too obvious with all these stimulus package jokes, but I digress. If somebody charged up this part of my brain and then I released all of these hormones and to my left was a human and to my right was an ant, rage would go towards the human.
That's what these animal studies have shown, that they would be more prone. So the hypothalamus has a role, I guess, suggesting in male dominance in animal communities that they just attack. That's where it all comes from, the hypothalamus.
So what does this tell us about, can we get so angry we forget what we're doing?
Well, that's just to show that it has a lot to do with the brain, and you can artificially stimulate it, especially if it's just attacking nothing. Stimulating, if you can stimulate it and artificially create your brain to attack nothing, perhaps there's a key in real life. And there's a thing called intermediate explosive disorder, known as IED, associated with rage blackouts. It is an impulsive disorder like kleptomania or pyromania. So in kleptomania, you're actually stealing. You actually don't know you're actually doing it. It's just, oh, I'm stealing. Whoops. I didn't know. Like, it actually generally, you don't know how it got in the bag. Not that's going to stand up in court, but it can be proven that you do have kleptomania. It's just stealing for this. Don't even know why you're doing it.
And they think this is related to...
Yeah. And so, you know, and this is unpremediated, disproportionate reaction to provocation. So you don't know why you do it. So nothing could happen and all of a sudden you just get angry.
But then you remember that you were angry or?
Well, that's the thing. They don't know that. There's actually no studies that's shown that you know you're angry, because these outbreaks, even though you're acting to nothing, they last less than an hour and it's greater in men than women. And you don't really, there's no studies to show that a rage blackout is responsible. You might not remember. There's no conclusive study on that.
So we just know what rage is for now, but we don't actually know that remember what you've done or that there was a trigger.
So we know that you can have untriggered rage. So nothing could happen and you could get angry, but I don't know if that's associated with blacking out at all.
So myth or fact?
I think
summarize it for me, Shane.
I think it's a myth. I think I'm going to say it is a myth. It might happen because kleptomaniacs claim they don't remember stealing. So maybe getting angry. And anecdotal, I've had a few occasions I've gotten so angry, but that's by being provoked,
mm-hmm.
that I've forgotten what I've said or done. So it could happen, I think. Fits of, you know, getting fits of rage, just don't know what happened after that.
Because a memory, we spoke about a few weeks ago about what is a memory.
Mm.
And so you would have to have, and that's neurons that are making pathways in your brain and then getting used to those pathways.
Yeah. So we also got to remember that actually this limbic system, sorry to interrupt you, but the limbic system is also associated with memory as well. So maybe the overstimulation of, this is my theory now.
Right.
This overstimulation of all these other hormones to make you really angry, because it's a real, real strong response you have when you're angry. Could be overriding the memory. Who knows?
Who knows? If you do know, or if you've got any more questions, do SMS us on 0427-JOY-949. Or if you have a question you would like us to answer, it's a science-based question, or perhaps about winter, then you can also SMS us in.
Yes, and after this song, Kane, a lovely producer, is going to talk about, if an alien virus existed, can it get rid of our emotions?
And you're listening to The Petri Dish on Joy 94.9. And right now, it's up for our section where we look at science movies or sci-fi concepts in movies and we say, could they really happen? And of course, we have Kane here to tell us all about the rage virus.
Actually, no. That was last week.
Oh, that was last week. I'm behind the times. Yeah. I've been told this before. Kane, what are you talking about? What are you doing here?
This week, I'm doing The Invasion, which is a remake of Invasion of the Body Snatchers, which had Leonard Nimoy in it.
Right. Okay. So, what movie is this related to? What science concept, is this related to?
Well, these spores come down from outer space, and then they take over people's bodies and remove their emotions. So
it's the opposite of the rage virus,
it's
really.
It's the complete opposite, where people are really angry all the time. This is the anti-rage virus. And so these are like emotionless people who run around playing a massive game of gang tiggy.
Wow. Okay. So tell me, could this happen? Could a virus actually remove our ability to feel emotions?
Well, as Shane talked about before, our emotions and that come from our hypothalamus and our limbic system. And there's reference to the frontal cortex of the brain, which tells us back tells us what we're what we should be feeling in relation to our hormones and all that stuff. And because it's such a complex system, it's pretty hard to try and remove that through a simple virus, because as viruses and spores and that go, they infect an area and they take over a particular type of cell by attaching onto an external, like a part of the cell's metabolism or part of the cell's function.
Okay, so it takes a hold of the cell and it will stop it from working. So isn't it possible that it could just take a hold of nerve cells in the brain?
Well, this is possible because it does happen a lot with diseases such as meningitis or things that cause the swelling of the brain or that sort of thing. Can even cause Alzheimer's disease as they attach onto dopaminergic receptors in the brain.
Okay, well, so could it take a hold of all the nerve cells related to our emotions?
No, because there's such a variety of them, as well as different functions that they play in other parts of the brain. The closest that they could do is take away our ability to read other people's emotions.
Wow, so could it, so when you talk about other things, so you're talking about there's serotonin and there's dopamine and there's
oxytocin. And
we would need a virus that could attack all of these at once.
Yeah. Yes, there's such a variety out there. They take, and they also read our hormone levels, our blood pressure, blood glucose.
So that's going to be one powerful virus.
It would have to be one powerful virus, and the shotgun effect of attacking all of those at the same time would probably kill us.
This is trouble. So we're not going to turn into zombies. We're just going to be dead.
We're just going to be dead. We're not going to be wandering around, no emotions, playing a massive game of Kang Tiki.
So how do you explain the invasion then? Are you saying that's just a movie?
I'm saying that it's just a movie. It's not based on fact, and we weren't all stuck inside of a dream like Nicole Kidman tried to.
Would Leonard Nimoy do that to us?
I don't. Well, the difference between the Leonard Nimoy one and the Nicole Kidman one is instead of it being a spore that goes into us, they're these giant spores. And they send out little tentacles and eat us and clone us.
So how likely is that?
Slightly more likely, but not very.
Excellent. We're just going to quickly read through some of the SMSs we've got today. And we've got, when we were talking about anxiety pills, we got an SMS that said, "Thanks for covering this. I had problems for a few years and I did not take pills, worried about the reactions, and meditation, exercise were good and beneficial." So it is I that solved the pills, that solved the problem and not the pills, was that message. And we also have a message from Jack in Adelaide who says, "Thanks for the interesting discussion. I love the Petri dish." Thanks, guys, for that. And Stephen also sent us a message of love. So thanks for SMSing in. Next week, we'll be talking all about winter with the coming season and the cold.
Our winter of discontent is coming.
Ooh, that's exactly right. And to outro, we have lost our tape, so I'm going to sing and Kane's going to take us out with the element. Please excuse this and keep listening.
Today's show was brought to you by the letters HE for helium and the number 2. Thank you for listening to the Petri Dish.
Oh, never again. Thanks for listening.
Thanks for listening to the podcast of the Petri Dish.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.